Hi everyone, this is Jenny Wood, and you're listening to Creating Futures from SALT, the show that speaks to incredible people on their career journey.
No two brains are the same. Diagnosis or not, we can all benefit from a more inclusive view of ourselves, at work, in life, and introspectively. Today, we are speaking to Samantha Hugh, founder and director of ADHD Girls. Sam is an accomplished speaker, consultant, and soon-to-be author on the subject of neurodivergence, advocating for herself and others in the workplace and using her platform to empower women to embrace their neurodivergence. We chatted to Sam about her own experience across different cultures and why understanding is so important. We hope you enjoy the interview.
Hi, I'm Dr. Samantha Hugh, a storyteller with a medical science PhD, specializing in demystifying ADHD and neurodiversity. I founded ADHD Girls before I was diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 40. And since then, I also identify with being autistic, dyspraxic, and Tourette. I deliver neurodiversity trainings that encourages empathic understanding, that instills psychological safety and catalyzes positive actions within the workforce. Built on the foundation of lived experience research through surveys, our events-based learning, and also stories of other neurodivergent, I deliver trainings that provide recommendations around best practice approaches for recruitment, retention, and how to foster sense of belonging through an intersectional lens.
And how would you describe what you do?
So we mainly create personal and professional development workshops for women with ADHD, and I'm in the process of looking into how to create this learning platform, what I like to call like a school of life-esque type of platform for neurodivergence. And I am also in the process of writing a book about neurodiversity and intersectionality, which will branch into LinkedIn campaigns and newsletter as well. So our projects are constantly evolving and really based on the most urgent areas that women with ADHD need. Another thing that ADHD Girls does is regularly give neurodiversity training to the workplace to really bring some insight into the lived experiences of ADHD and neurodivergence. I've actually spoken within companies, and I've also trained educational and teaching staff with experiences in providing support for university students.
And just to start us off with, can we talk about what neurodiversity is? Define that for people that are less familiar.
So that's really interesting, right? Because when you think about neurodiversity and you hear so many people talking about it on LinkedIn, this term is almost like catching fire. And neurodiversity means all brains are different and actually includes all of us. But what you tend to see is that people use it as an example to describe learning differences. ADHD, autism, dyspraxia, dyslexia, Tourette syndrome, they are all kind of brain differences. So neurodiversity itself, the term, was coined by Judy Singer, who is a Australian sociologist in the 1990s, and it means the infinite variation of human cognitive functioning within the brain. As we know, we have over 80 billion brain cells, and so it makes sense that some of us might have genetic predispositions to certain brain differences. It doesn't mean that they are sort of an isolated case, because of the 80 billion brain cells that we have, the experiences that we grow up in and that we're constantly exposed to really shape the way our brain works. So even without neurodivergence, which is a condition that really marks you as being someone who thinks differently, we are subjected to so many experiences in life, like childhood experiences and neuroplasticity that makes everyone different. And so neurodiversity itself was coined because Judy Singer was looking in the autism movement and see that there's a lot of stigma associated with it. The medical model of disability really shows that people emphasizes on the individual as being impaired and they need to be fixed. So I think by coining this new term, neurodiversity, it's almost encouraged a new movement where people are looking at, okay, there are challenges, but we also have strengths like everyone else. And so how can we as a society remove the barriers so that neurodivergence can thrive in life. So I think that's where we're at now with neurodiversity.
Reading through some of your newsletters, some of the content that you've been putting out there, you talk about the dangers of generalizing neurodiversity and not recognizing intersectionality and its effects, especially when it comes to the labels high functioning and low functioning. So why is that so important to understand?
Yeah, so I don't think there are enough of us really talking on overarching context of neurodiversity at the moment. Because we are so focused, especially when we are late diagnosed, we're so focused on really figuring out what that label means to us. So you see quite a few people writing on social media saying, my ADHD means that I'm like this, my autism means that I'm like this. But what people really neglect to talk about is that even within the diversity, there is diversity itself. And for people like me who initially found, oh, I have found my tribe, I created a community, but I still felt like an outsider within this community because everyone was talking about their experiences, the neurodiverse experiences, growing up and in school, and it's not really the same as mine. One of the first articles I read in the newspaper focused so much on how they really struggle in school. And for me, like even though there was a struggle in school in my teenage years, I actually didn't do that badly in school because I had a really good sporting regime that I started when I was in primary school. And then when I went to secondary school, I was around girls who were really academic. And in Asia, where I grew up, it was cool to be clever. And it was cool to study hard because that's what society leads us to believe, is such a strong emphasis on education. That even me, someone with ADHD who really struggled to focus and figure out why I don't like geography and nothing went into my brain. It was as if I was learning a different language on an alien planet. Like I somehow managed to cram it all in despite getting some C's. But then by focusing on my interest, which was biology at the time, I really flew through school. Although that came with really stringent coping strategies, like really putting very stringent timetable and time boxing into my day and various other things. And so education itself wasn't that difficult for me. So there are so many intersections with it, nuances within our neurodivergence that's not explained. And I'm not getting the answers from hearing people talk about neurodiversity. And before long, I'm thinking about my own intersectionality, growing up in a different culture and being a different ethnicity, coming here when I was 24 and having lived here for nearly two decades, knowing what it's like to work in England and work with people who maybe were from private education. And so there is almost a class divide that I'm seeing even within society itself without even thinking about neurodiversity. And people who do not come from a certain class, they do not get the same chances to life. I remember sitting in a meeting with a medical director and he said how we screen out the CVs is that if they didn't go to a private school, they just go into the dumb pile, and then the ones who did would stand a chance. Just to think like such a barrier exists and not talked about, it's unthinkable. And then when I became a parent, a new mum, something really changed within me. I became more anxious and I couldn't imagine how anyone could juggle family and career because I didn't have support system here and also didn't know that I had ADHD and some OCD too. So that was a really key transition in my life and people don't talk about it enough. And as a result, a lot of new parents with neurodivergence don't really get a lot of support and they almost rough it out and hope to survive. When workplaces say, this is what we do for people with ADHD, this is our policies for autistic individuals, they're not really seeing the whole picture. And they are not the only ones who are generalizing this. Even neurodivergent think that a lot of their traits is caused by being ADHD or being autistic. But it might be caused by the trauma that you sustain growing up. So it's important to understand because ultimately I think if we're going to try and support each person, we need to figure out like what are the factors that are stopping me from fulfilling my potential, to gaining my place in the world of work, to actually having a harmonious family home as well. Your neurodivergence, it's an explanation, not an excuse. By knowing what it is that causes you to think and act a certain way, then you might come to a resolution earlier. When it comes to the labels of high functioning and low functioning, That's one thing I came across very early on. And very interestingly, actually, a lot of people who were seeking a diagnosis later in life, they think being associated with being high functioning is actually, wow, I managed to fly under the radar because I actually managed to manage. But it isn't the case, because high functioning label means that, okay, you have kept an appearance that looked as though you have achieved and you've become a director of a big tech company. But there's so much underneath the surface. I have personally been described as, it's like I'm a swan swimming gracefully on the surface, but underneath I'm paddling really rigorously. Being labeled high functioning or too smart to have ADHD would silence you from actually asking for help, because it's almost a cycle of trying to keep up that appearance and then not asking for help because you don't want to appear weak. And that doesn't help anybody. And especially when we have ADHD, if we have managed to fly under the radar for many decades, we've also developed some sort of perfectionism where we try to appear like we're doing okay. And underneath that, no one knows. So it's not a compliment to be associated with a high-functioning label, and also it's definitely not a compliment and very detrimental to be associated with a low-functioning label. So it's not exactly fair, because these labels, the stories of success and failure in your life, it's not accidental. Our stories are written in the stars from the day we were born, because the place that we are born into, the upbringing that we get and the doors that are open to us really dictate the way we go in life and our mentality, our self-esteem. So that's the long-winded story of this. I hope that makes sense.
I think it definitely does. And it really feeds in to what you were saying again about just seeing a person's circumstances as well beyond diagnosis. You recently led a conference focused around ADHD in the workplace and what best practices look like there. I'm wondering if you can share some key takeaways with us from that.
Of course. So the conference that I led was called ADHD Best Practice at Work. We have three keynote speakers, all really amazing: Tony Lloyd, Amanda Kirby, and Atif Chowdhury. And then we led this mastermind session where we brought ADHDers and the world of work together, and people in hiring positions, managers, HR specialists, and ADHD coaches. And we came up with some key takeaways and ideas to improve recruitment, retention, and sense of belonging, and also the intersectionality within the workplace. So some of the barriers that we heard about within recruitment is that the recruitment process itself marginalize ADHDers and other neurodivergents. And there is also some self-esteem issues in one owning their strengths during the application and the interview process, because ADHDers often are plagued with self-doubt. There is, of course, exception, and I don't want to generalize, but if we're not creative, we tend to fall into self-doubt and imposter syndrome. And yeah, and so there are a lot of people also say that there's lack of understanding in the environment, and that is not distinct to the workplace. It begins in the school, and really everyone getting on the same page with neurodiversity really helps just to reduce the stigma and actually make people feel more belong at work. And the solutions that we came up with, they are around creating an anticipatory welcome for everyone without really thinking, okay, you are neurodivergent, we're going to make this adjustments for you. It's more like, how do you welcome everyone? Also, how to support with the processes and the training of managers and CEOs, the people who hire as well, to be more inclusive and have a more inclusive hiring process as well, something that's more accessible to everyone, where we can have more means of submitting application. So rather than a long form which puts certain people off, like dyslexics and ADHDs, you would do better if you have more like video or audio even, or a call where, or an interview where you ask a question and then it is more of a back and forth. And so within retention and sense of belonging, like I said, it's so important to create that company culture, because there are challenges when ADHDers feel like people are talking about them specifically and they must fit in rather than actually work on their strengths. Because of the past traumas, if someone doesn't listen to you at work, you can bring back those traumas. I've seen that some ADHDers get fired because they're so verbal. And they're verbal most of the time because they're really very confident about the suggestions of solutions where we see challenges with such like innovative thinkers and we love to solve problems. So sometimes it doesn't work out well because we might not recognize the hierarchy within work because we personally don't like hierarchy. We like autonomy and ownership. So some of the ways we can support ADHDers to highlight the need for them to feel secure and safe and to feel accepted and understood and also connected to the team, and the team also having more general awareness of neurodiversity and intersectionality. In the conference, we came up with some identities where you might not realize that these communities actually get marginalized. So we often talk about gender, race, and class or sexual orientation, but there's also the things like life stages. I spoke about being a parent or actually having caring responsibilities for somebody. And so these are the things that we need to think about, because at the end of the day, we are helping people to come to work and do their best job and do their best work. So there are certain cultures where there's a stigma of shame attached to ADHD. So people might not want to talk about it so much or might not want to be the poster person for ADHD in the company, which is normally what happens. If you have a neurodivergence and you want to help or advocate for yourself and other people, you suddenly get put into panels and then you get advertised as the token autistic person, which like superb tech superpowers. At the same time, yeah, we should think about what this person is comfortable with. Are they okay with that? And also, what does their culture think about that? So, yeah, there are so many things. There are extra barriers when you think about more intersections. So whatever you do, like just try and look at the person as an individual and really ask them what they need. And a lot of the time, if you come from a culture where you don't necessarily advocate for yourself, it might take some time for this to happen, for you to actually talk about what you need. We always say try and keep a consistent channel of communication where it doesn't end within that one meeting of reasonable adjustments. We talked about having like continuous communications with your line manager or the people you work with, and really figure out what works best for you and the team as well. And another thing, and I actually have a lot to talk about, is to check your unspoken prejudices, because there are a lot of people who have unconscious biases and it might be shaped by their own experience in society, and to really check that and not bring that into work and when you interact with somebody, because it can be really obvious sometimes. And like whoever has been marginalized, they would know immediately. There's just so much to go into, and I don't want to go into any examples that will kind of be of a sensitive nature.
Definitely. Thank you, Sam. There's so much in there. I agree. And picking up just on what you said with the stigma around ADHD and this unconscious bias that people can unintentionally, I guess, unconsciously act on, which creates this environment of shame, lack of comfort, not nurturing the best work from an employee who's neurodivergent. If you are in an environment that does stigmatize ADHD, what are some practical things you can start doing to make that constant communication a reality?
So I think it really begins with the management, right? Proposing speakers who come from lived experience to come and talk within the organization. Because personally, that has happened when I went to talk at this workplace. The person who introduced me was the person who lead the leaders within the organization. So she is the upper management and she leads the middle management. And then, of course, then the rest of everyone else. So if you have someone that comes in and talk about, okay, these are the challenges, right, with being neurodivergent, but look at me, I'm here, I'm talking to you, and I'm advocating for myself and other people. I'm a normal human being. When you see me, you almost don't see it because it is invisible. And so to actually have someone on the stage to say that I am just like you, I'm capable of running an enterprise. I have challenges with managing being a mother, various other things that society needs me to be and my family needs me to be. So if people can see, okay, this manager, this CEO who's invited this person, and then actively on stage say, okay, we know that there are outliers among us and we will support you. By having this person to acknowledge in a public space that, okay, it's okay to be this way, then people in the audience, the teams, were saying, oh, wow, okay, so I'm actually okay to be myself. I can disclose, I can talk to you about my challenges. And then we can find out strategies to really change culture to be more inclusive to everyone. And it's so important that it really starts from the top, but it can't end on the top. Because a lot of time people have what they call frozen middles, and especially in huge organizations, the upper management think that, oh, we're going to roll out these DEI policies for neurodivergence, and we're going to want them to feel at home because we want to stop the great resignation. But at the end of the day, if you don't have strategies that trickle through different teams, the middle managers, and actually consistently ask for assessment and feedback of how this campaign is doing, then it's not going to work and not going to help the actual people who need the help. Because then you're going to get neurodivergence on the project execution side who feel like actually this company doesn't really do enough for us. It's all talk and no action. And I've seen so many of these examples in the companies that I trained. And it's very sad for me because I always wish that I could do more. But myself, I couldn't go into corporate because I accepted some time ago that I think I'm much better doing my own thing. And I always say that you have to go where you are flower, because ADHD is so situationally dependent. We are so dependent on our environment that you see the notable differences when you're in an environment that really helps you to thrive.
I think that's a really powerful thing to share with our audience as well, just knowing yourself within that environment that you're in. When we talk about these more kind of negative examples of stigmatized environments at work, what do you think the stigma really relates to? Is it our perception of what productivity looks like?
Yeah, I think it's really wide, isn't it? Because everyone will have a different idea of what, say, ADHD looks like in your brain. And you might think that that person is really messy. And one of the favorite stigma that I've heard that I couldn't believe I heard is that when someone disclosed their neurodivergence, their manager actually took 3 steps back as though they were dangerous. And I was like, what? This is just out of this world. But that's the kind of thing that makes it hard for ADHDers to disclose. We want to be seen as people. And imagine if you've been seen as just like everyone else until you are age 40 when you got your diagnosis, and then all of a sudden you're being treated like you have a disease. Yeah, that's the problem with the stigma, is that everyone's going to think differently. But then if you have someone who has ADHD in your family or other people with ADHD who appear that they can still be functional people within society, they can hold down jobs, then you're less likely to be worried, right? And that's why it's more important to see more examples of least experienced advocates who can maintain an order in society and in their lives. And more people talk about this in this way, then it will then normalize neurodiversity almost.
And you mentioned initially, just talking about your schooling, that you were using stringent scheduling and time planning. I wonder if that's still a technique that you use to this day, or if you have another kind of framework.
Well, actually, I was definitely more effective when I was younger, because now with age, I definitely feel the effects of this organization with more things to juggle with a family. But yeah, I had very, very strict adherence to my planner, and I had a really good planner where I had like the hours all broken down. And when I was studying, I had this visual timetable in front of me, and that was so, so effective. And also having omega-3 before my exams, that seemed to wake my brain up. And it wasn't a healthy coping strategy, but then I used to just eat a chocolate bar, like a whole chocolate bar just before my exams. And I think the sugar powered me through that hour. And it is not healthy, but it worked. But now, obviously, it is different. And I try and really think about things that can really make a difference to my life. And I could work so much harder, but I try not to now, because I need to do what's possible for my nervous system. Because being the way that I'm built, I'm very prone to overwhelm and burnout. And so I need to maintain some boundaries and also, yeah, really understand what works for me at the end of the day, because I get a lot of messages as well from people, and I would love to answer all of them, but then they all take energy. And I think that when I do that, when I help other people, I say no to my own children already as it is, don't spend enough time with them. And so, yeah, I got to make a choice, and that helps me when I think what's important right now for me, and these are my values.
That's fantastic. And I think that's so important to have as part of the discussion around what success looks like and what productivity looks like, because it is a long-term game. Unlike when you're a student and you've got your exams and then they're over, your list is always going to be your list at work, unfortunately. And I wonder if there's some advice you wish you'd heard earlier on in your career that might have helped with your kind of perspective about work life.
Well, actually, one thing that I heard early on, and I think that is so true, and I didn't really associate much importance to it, is that don't go for the money. And I'll tell you, that sounds like really counterproductive because we're meant to be working to pay our living. But yeah, don't go for it just for the money, because especially now after the pandemic, everyone's realizing that, wow, what am I doing here? My meaning in my life is more important than the money I'm going to earn from it. And so whilst you still want to create a living that could help you, you also want to have a career that you love. And so I doubted myself, because I worked in 16 work sectors and I have a tendency to really do things that I'm interested in. And when that interest tapers off, I tend to lose that motivation. That's when I either take a break and then move into something new and different, or I just take a break and get depressed. And so what I used to think, okay, I have a nervous system that really needs me to do something that makes me feel alive. But at the same time, when I'm not doing it in between, in the transition, I get really depressed, because that's the anxiety, the existential anxiety that I like to really tell everyone that I have. And what I realized recently from being someone who had to trust my instinct that this is going to go well is that no one ever has certainty in life. You only have anxiety. So that's why even if you are in a full-time job, okay, even if it's permanent, there's no telling how long you would like to continue doing it and whether you're happy to be doing it. It's great if you are, but if you are not, then it's not a bad thing for you to think about doing something that makes you happier. Because ultimately we have one life, right? And we need to do things that work for us, especially when families and various other life circumstances go play into it as well, into our career choices.
I love that, Sam. That's an amazing philosophy. And yeah, I draw inspiration from it. I'm sure a lot of our audience will. You've worked across so many different industries. You've had such a varied and interesting experience that's led you into starting ADHD Girls. And I can see how much you're kind of reading and learning and listening all the time. I wonder if you have a favorite learning moment that sort of changed the way you work.
Yeah, so, well, there's so many people, because like you say, I'm constantly learning, right? But I didn't do a degree in neurodiversity. I don't think there is one. And a lot of people were doing support and management and training of neurodiversity at work. They're coming from a fresh base. People like Professor Amanda Kirby, who's done it for decades, she's doing research at the same time. But we also need lived experience stories. And that's what I have come to gain more confidence over time, because when I started, I had imposter syndrome, thinking, oh no, I need to get an organizational psychologist qualification on top of the 3 degrees that I had in order to actually start talking about ADHD. But then over time, I realized that the people that I employed to run the workshops for me, they know probably just as much as me, or if not, like, less. Dare I say that, right? But that's because I come from lived experience of knowing what it's like to live with neurodivergence for 40 years across different cultures and class and life stage, and also hormones. So what I know is still so valuable. And that's what I tell other people, like, I want to increase representation of people like me, like you, who all have different perspectives of the stories. And we shouldn't leave it to one organization or one person to do the training, because that's not going to be holistic. And so, yeah, and that's what I'm trying to do right now. I'm trying to increase representation, especially from communities that have been marginalized.
Being diagnosed later on, I wonder if there was anything that helped you initially to understand ADHD. I'm just thinking for people that might be listening that recognize some of these traits but haven't been diagnosed. Is there anywhere you would send them?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Go to Instagram. I mean, that sounds really, like, really simple, but that's because when you Google ADHD or autism, the things that come up on the internet, especially if you go on the NHS website or the US FDA website, it is so depressing, and they can really send you on a spiral and you go to a dark corner and hyperventilate. But if you actually listen to lived experiences, and Instagram has got so many people right now, they're creating really fun reels to tell you what ADHD for them is like. But at the same time, you need to take it with a pinch of salt. There is validation in the things that you recognize within their traits, but also think like what is you, and don't confuse that because everyone's different. I started with having conversations with women with ADHD, and I have a YouTube channel that's free if you want to look at it. And in it, I talk to women of all like representations and class and culture about what neurodiversity, well, actually ADHD means to them. And actually very early on in my journey, I did ask Miss ADHD what superpowers she has. And I think I explain it in my upcoming book that when I first navigated my diagnosis, I wanted to know if I'm okay. It's such a big turning point in your life and you don't know anything about it apart from what you've heard. And it might not be a very good thing. And so I wanted to know if I'm okay. I wanted to know that, you know, am I going to be able to go forth and live a fulfilling life? And the answer is yes, because we have to balance the positive with the challenges, right? And some of the people who really talk about ADHD in a positive way, whilst also not minimizing the challenges, are Dr. Ed Hallowell. He's great, and he has a book called ADHD 2.0. And if you want to find out more about women with ADHD, there is Kathleen Nadeau, Patricia Quinn. There's also another person, Sarah Solden, who I interviewed. She also got a diagnosis with ADHD around the same age as me, but she told me something that I really resonate with is that she was mute up until the time she was diagnosed, and after that she told herself she's not going to be quiet anymore, and that was me as well. So that was so great, and she has a book and actually look into how you can radically accept your neurodivergence. So many resources. I actually have some articles that I wrote on my website, adhdgirls.co.uk, where like I list all my recommended podcasts, books, and all sorts. It's all free. And the most important thing really is finding your community. Some people would like to just have an Instagram community or a TikTok community or a LinkedIn community, but if you want more, and if you want a place where you can ask more ad hoc questions, I have a free WhatsApp community that you can access through my Instagram link tree.
There's so much in there. I love that. So just before I ask you the final question, I just wanted to give you the floor. If there's anything you want to promote with your work or ADHD Girls that might be coming up soon.
Yeah, so I have a lot of projects on the go. Gotta admit, I'm struggling to prioritize, but I am trying to do them at the same time. So one of them is my book on intersectionality, but it's not going to be titled that way. I'm still thinking about a way that I could title it so that it resonates with everyone. Another thing that I'm working on is this learning platform where I want to create more fun videos, bite-sized fun videos to help women with ADHD and other neurodivergent stuff, and also provide them with help in different sections of their lives. I think that's it for now, but I'm also hoping to run a LinkedIn campaign on intersectionality coming up.
We will keep our eyes peeled for that, Sam. Thank you so much. And final question, what did you want to be when you were growing up?
Yeah, so I always wanted to be a creative. I thought I was really bad in arts, but recently I thought about it and kind of figured out that actually just because you're bad at art in school doesn't mean that you're not creative. And so what I always like to do is I love directing like a play or a production, and then presenting my ideas in a fun and creative ways. And I think I'm doing all that now. I've come to my late 30s to understand that creative freedom of expression is really important to me, and I have almost no patience for people who don't listen to my ID. And that happens when I'm in organizations and they might have different ways of thinking. So I'm really glad right now that I'm doing my own thing. And I think if you have some creativity or a need to be creative, like just really work on it and channel that to something, you might be creating your own place in the world of work, a job that's not existent yet. To keep going.
So don't forget to click that subscribe button on Spotify. Find us, it's Salt Creating Futures, and we'll see you very soon.